KKCR, Hanalei, KAQA, Kilauea, K284AL, Haleiwa. So fun that Oahu is with us nowadays.
Yeah, they're in our holiday melange.
Yes, and this is the station that loves you.
Wait, no, let's do it again. The station that loves you.
And we'll have some other people in the studio today with us, too.
It's true.
It is true.
It is true.
But right now...
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of KKCR, its management, board, volunteers, or underwriters.
And mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio. Jonathan.
Yes, Felicia.
Merry, Merry Christmas.
Hey, thank you. And likewise to you and yours and your ohana and your friends and the people that are important to you, which I think is probably a lot of people.
It is. It's an awful lot of people. I was going to start off today with a song. This one is Lyle Lovett, and he's a lot of fun. I like Lyle Lovett. He's got a good sense of humor, too. So thank you. That was Lyle Lovett, and we did have a little bit of dropout on that one. I'm not sure why.
Sounded good, though.
Yeah, I like him a lot.
Yeah, he's got funny hair. I like that about him.
Uh-huh.
He's got big, his hair, he's got hair that's reaching up towards God.
He plays with the fact that he's funny looking. But speaking about reaching up towards God, Christmas, even though we believe Jesus was born in the summertime, if you read the Bible.
Well, you know.
Yeah, you know, it works, I guess, to do it this time of year, but...
This is a good time of year to celebrate light and loving, regardless of what your faith or faiths may be. It's hard to get too worked up about goodwill towards others. You know, like, oh, I hate that holiday.
Right. No, it's a really good one. In fact, Jesus, one of the things that he said in, John, I think it's like John 13, maybe 34, something like that. He said, when the Pharisees were picking at him saying, what's the most important commandment? And he said, a new commandment I give to you, and that's that you love one another as I have loved you. And I, you know, that's something I can work with, right?
Well, you know, it's let's look at it. What do we got here? We have Jesus saying that love is the central message. Well, that's hard to get worked up about. It seems like that's kind of basically good.
Yeah, hard to get worked up in a bad way, but
yeah,
easy to get
way.
Worked up in a good way, right?
I think so.
That's I think that's the main message.
It's very grounded.
Very grounded.
You know, it doesn't say, like, worship me above all others. It doesn't say that. It doesn't say, make sure you dressed up real nice when you go to church. It doesn't say that.
No.
It says love one another.
Mm-hmm. It actually doesn't say to judge others.
Mm.
And then, I can't remember where the scripture is, but it says in there, you know, you will be judged as you judge others.
Yeah, judge ye not, lest thy be judged, or something.
Something like that. It kind of sounds like an Old Testament scripture.
It could be. I'm weak on that stuff. I'm happy just to know like one or two.
Well, I don't really have it very memorized. But you know what? Odd thing, I have read the whole book.
Really?
Yeah, I have. And an interesting thing.
Which one?
The Bible.
Which one?
Well, there's a lot. But
there are many Bibles.
There are many. And I would say by the time I have read it, most of it I read as a teenager. So, you know, I didn't do it as one complete sit down and read, but I did actually have a conscious intention to read the whole book. And the good thing is that it ends happy. Like, I read the book, and we win.
We do?
Yeah, we do.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
I like victories.
The victories is nice. And,
yeah.
You know.
Well, that's a blessing.
That's a blessing, and I'm a rather, if I was going to say, a rather inclusive Christian, but... I would say that, you know, Jesus is an activist and a rebel. And
he seemed that way.
A spiritual revolutionary.
Overturning tables.
Overturning tables and definitely ready to call it out when something wasn't quite fair.
Taking on the empire. Yeah.
For sure.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like, you know, he'd be right with us, you know, all these different
things. He's a good role model.
He's a good role model.
You know, I just saw... I want to call him Stuart Brandt every time I think of him, but it's not Stuart Brandt.
Is it Russell Brandt?
It's Russell Brandt.
Oh, yeah. Brand.
Brand. The brand of Russell. And he just did a like hour and a half, 2 hour performance called
Messiah Complex.
Messiah Complex. And he compared himself to a variety of revolutionary leaders, one of them being Jesus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Very tastefully, though. I mean, other than the fact that he's a raucous little slut.
Yeah, other than that.
Other than
his extremely juvenile sense of humor, he had a lot of really amazing things to say.
Right. And if I had a takeaway from that, is that he was pointing out, I'm trying to think what he really said, that these people like Gandhi and Che Guevara.
Malcolm X. And Jesus Christ.
Yeah, he didn't put them those three totally with Jesus, though. And what those three was saying, they were imperfect,
right?
And
but they were icons of almost of worship in a way.
Yeah, but he was showing how even though they were flawed in so many ways, that their collective, their life's work, left a really really good impact. And then when he looked at Hitler, I think, was his main one of looking at as a negative.
Sort of a fallen angel, if you will.
A fallen angel that, you know, it's hard to really find a lot that's good with him, but he's kind of ordinary in a lot of ways.
Yeah, mundane.
Mundane, I think that was his word.
Mundane. Of this world.
Mm-hmm. And I think when he was in the Messiah Complex, when he's judging himself or comparing himself to these other people, he's really just sort of saying, anybody
right.
can have a Messiah complex. Anybody has the potential
right.
to actually be amazing, and he's making fun of himself.
Yeah, a little bit. While he's on the stage with about, I don't know, 3,500 or 5,000 people in thrall.
Yes.
So it's a pretty impressive performance.
Yeah, it was a pretty good performance. And actually, I hadn't even thought to speak about Russell Brand, but he often makes quite a lot of really good observations and comments about...
He really does, and he does it at kind of a blue streak. I mean, like talking over a mile a minute. You can believe all the things he said in such a short period of time.
Right. But he speaks truth to power pretty well.
He does. And with an English accent.
And with an English accent. And a Cockney accent.
Like, is it? Is it Cockney?
He's like low-class English.
I don't think it's Cockney, though. There's like 17 different dialects
There's
or something.
There's a whole lot of different dialects, but he definitely sounds like he comes from the low-rent district.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. You can tell it's not the Queen's English.
No, it really isn't. Although he can do that one, too.
He can, but it's not...
It's the Queen!
It's not his... native tongue.
Yeah, his mother tongue.
Not his mother tongue. So, yeah, that was pretty good. And I have one more scripture.
Oh, okay.
I want to throw it out.
Lay it on us.
Philippians 4:6.
This is Felicia on Philippians.
Felicia on Philippians. And I'm not pulling the whole thing, but it says, be anxious for nothing. And the extension on that would be something like, but in everything with prayer and supplication and thanksgiving. Basically ask. Be anxious for nothing when you're asking for help, that things will work out. But in Proverbs or one of the earlier books in the Bible, too, it says, be anxious for nothing. It says that earlier, too, when it's talking about the sparrows in the trees, like all these animals that do just fine. We will do just fine, too, that it's...
That's a happy thought.
It is a happy thought. It's like, what's the point of being stressed all the time?
Hmm.
Just rejoice.
Well, if you have like a lot of troubles that you're feeling are perhaps on the verge of surmounting you, you don't want to add an additional problem of being stressed out about your problems, because that's creating more problems. So you sort of take things with an equanimous mind, equal, balanced, grounded.
I think when I look at like the Old Testament piece on that one too, it's that so much of the complexity in society is things that we create for ourselves.
Oh yeah, we made it up ourselves.
We made it up ourselves, yeah. And it's all an illusion really, and so it's like...
Or a social construct.
Or a social construct. My son said something to me though that I thought was pretty on point, and that was that perhaps we are more like bees or ants, because I was saying
the hive mind
that like I'm much more comfortable in a rural environment, and I was suggesting that urban living isn't natural.
He might not be.
But he was saying, well, maybe all these constructs that we build aren't natural, but to be living in essentially a hive, like we're obviously a herding
animal. And I was just, you know, streaming along the black ribbon top, like, and all these ants, like me in their cars, are zooming in a line. We're all following the same trail, the same track. Have you ever watched ants do that?
Yeah. Well, that's a good way of looking at that. Like when we have a road, mm-hmm. we're like an ant trail.
Mm-hmm. That's what it seems like to me. Except our carapace, our outer shell is not made of lacquer. It's made of metal and glass and rubber. You know, that our automobile mm-hmm. is kind of an environment that we go into. It surrounds us. And then we can, by ankle flexing, that's the most amazing thing. By just flexing your ankle, you can zoom through space. Oh, I want to go faster. I'll flex my ankle.
It's an amazing time to be alive, really.
It really is.
It really is. Like, we're all endowed, like, beyond what the kings and queens of the past were.
Yeah, it's kind of miraculous.
It's miraculous. And when we have this age of coal and oil and the, you know, carbon fossil fuels.
Sure, the fossil age.
Those are our slaves and servants.
Yep.
You know, in the past, like, you know, they could travel around being carted around by people on their shoulders or
something
like that.
Not at 60 miles an hour.
Not at 60 miles an hour.
Which I wasn't going, by the way.
Okay.
Yeah, it was not.
You were not.
No, I followed the speed limit very carefully.
So, and by the way, this is a call-in show, 826-7771. And if you are listening from somewhere off-island, it's 866-275-1112. And
especially if you've never called into the show before, ever, never, ever, not even once. I've been talking to some friends of mine, and they were saying, hey, you know what? I really love those shows that you and Felicia do on KKCR. Those are some of my favorite shows. And I'd never heard that before from these particular friends. And I was like, well, how come have you ever called in? They said no. They said no. Sometimes there are those people who feel the need to be heard, and they'll call in. But then they said a lot of times someone else will call in and it'll say the thing that they were going to say.
Mm-hmm.
So they're like, oh, okay, what's the point? Well, the point is today it might be your turn to call in if you've never called in before.
That's right. Well, you know, one thing that I was thinking about, and I brought it in with me, and I'm going to write a letter on this one about the Princeville Affordable Housing Project. I'm going to write a letter of support to the Planning Commission because this meeting is coming up.
What are the basic contours of this proposal?
Well, it's an affordable housing project in Princeville, and this has been at least 25 years it's been under discussion, and so I am glad that it is finally happening. And as much as I don't think anybody likes seeing greenery and trees cut down, hopefully they'll have good plants in front of it, and it's going to be right along the highway right there, sort of between Foodland and the fire station. But
it's like parking lot and jungle right now.
Huh. But there's going to be, I'm pulling, and people probably hear me making a little bit of noise here. I'm looking to make sure I have it correctly.
Yeah, that's the verisimilitude of radio. That paper rustling sound, that's actually an actual piece of paper.
It's an actual piece of paper. But, okay, it says plans call for the development of 44 one, two, and three-bedroom rental apartments, ranging in size from 745 to 1,125. 8 square feet on about 3.5 acres of vacant land.
How many units?
44, so it's not a whole lot, but
That's a chunk.
It's a chunk, and then you have to qualify for it economically.
And what are those qualifications?
You have to earn less than 60% of the island's median income. So 60% would be $38,600. So you have to earn less than $38,000 a year.
Under $40K.
And, you know, people should call the county housing area and put your name in, because there are a number of county housing, and I know that many people, they have to look at everybody's application equally, and so people even put their names in from the mainland before they move over here.
Oh, really?
And if you've done that, love to you, all that good, But, and I know a number of these places are about half full with people who just move here. And so I think that many people don't realize the county's got a really good first-time home buyers program. It's something to be thankful for on Christmas Eve. And but also I really like where they have this new rental thing, so people even could put their name in now. Even though it's a long time off before that comes up, there's some that come available for buying and some that come available for renting. And I think renting is really nice that they have that to be able to, for people who aren't ready yet to make a long-term commitment to buy.
Well, I can certainly relate to that because I'm not in any financial place to even consider such a thing.
You might be surprised, though. Like, when you do the county home buyers, first-time home buyers, you have to take a class, but it's a really worthwhile class, and it's called buyer readiness training. And they help you clean up your credit record. They help you get everything in place. And I live right across the street from an affordable housing project. And it's a great neighborhood full of people, happy people in, you know, 2-3-bedroom houses, lots of kids there. People take really good care of that area. And it works out. And they get in there oftentimes for less than what it would cost
To rent?
To rent.
Wow.
And sometimes, even if you're not quite ready to put your down payment in and you can't quite buy, you can rent for a while. And then they coalesce all that together. And it becomes your down payment. At least it was in the past that way.
That sounds like kind of a leg up.
Yeah, it's a leg up. So that's a really good thing. And I think housing, I've had so many friends lately who are pretty much without housing. And many of whom have had good housing for quite some time. They lose their housing because they do things like have a baby. And then people don't necessarily want a tenant with a child. Having a small child is often less desirable than having a pet. But something interesting when I was picking up some hitchhikers today.
Oh, yeah. I was going to try and segue into hitchhiking earlier when we were talking about the ribbon of asphalt, like ants and inside metal and rubber.
It always feeds this show a lot when I pick up hitchhikers because I learn so much from them. And I recommend, well, I shouldn't recommend anything, but I'm glad that I...
Yeah, you can be glad that you've done it.
I'm glad that I pick people up.
And you can say why.
Because I learn so much from people. I meet really quality people. And I can honestly say, like, I pick people up almost every day. And sometimes if I'm going on a long drive, I'm disappointed if I don't see somebody.
That was the case for me. There was no hitchhikers on my side of the road. There's hitchhikers on the other side of the road. And I thought, hey, I could not... give them a ride because
they're going the wrong way.
Yeah, going the wrong way.
But
I got excited for a second.
The middle group of people I picked up today.
The middle group?
Yeah.
How many hitchhikers did you give rides to today?
Well, three different sessions.
Wow.
But the middle group was a group of South American young people.
Oh, wow.
So one was in the front of the truck. The rest were in the back. But it was really telling because... these are college students.
Where in South America did you find out?
Yeah. I don't know how much I want to give away on them.
Oh, okay. I was just asking out of curiosity.
Several different countries. And they came on an internship program for college. And so they're working at a hotel. I'm not going to mention the exact hotel but they were actually pretty wide-eyed. They were like stunned because they came here thinking they're doing an internship for the hotel industry, and what they're doing is just cleaning hotel rooms.
That's a kind of internship.
It's a kind of internship, but it sounds like they are cleaning help. And they're paid a really low wage, and then there was no effort made whatsoever for them to have
housing really?
Or food or anything. So when they're getting these people who are like 20 years old, and the one who was in the front seat of the car with me came with $50.
Wow.
And then not getting paid for a while, but truly deeply stressed. It was a girl, this one.
Yeah, I can see why.
Because they're not going to make very much money. And they have nowhere to go.
Did they bring camping equipment? I mean...
Well, I mean, I think that they didn't expect this, and so they had all just met together, so they were friends. But I was saying, well, I'm sure you could talk to somebody in human resources, or they'll help you. And they said, they don't care about us at all.
Hmm.
They don't care at all.
That doesn't seem very Christian.
No, but what it does seem to me is like a bit of an exploited workforce. And to me, when you are doing that, because I used to be an employer, that means you can't find people to apply for a job. You know, you would want to have, you don't really want to get people who don't speak English as a first language. These guys were doing pretty good, though, frankly.
Mm. Well, they're educated, yeah.
Yeah, but you're educated. Can you speak another language?
Sí, sin duda. Yo hablo español.
Puedo hablar un poco, pero no mucho, you know, no bastante.
No con perfección.
Jugar aquí. So, I was just, I felt like that was taking advantage of a vulnerable workforce.
Yeah.
And then, like, one of them comes from a family with money, but so he was, like, trying to help the rest of them, but they, of course, can't find any place to rent, you know, and... Mm. I was trying to explain to them, well, people who live here can't find any place to rent.
Right.
It's not an easy thing.
Huh, that's a tough story.
Mm-hmm. And they're hungry, you know?
Like, and literally.
Literally. And they were very, very surprised at how much every single thing costs just to eat.
It's a big surprise. You know, it's the $10 gallon of milk surprise.
Right. So, you know, when you bring in a workforce... And you don't give them a heads up, like...
It seems mean, actually.
I think this girl was maybe 20.
Huh.
And was definitely frightened.
Huh.
Right? And so...
Well, that's... I wonder what could be done to the key assistance that would be the most help to them, I wonder.
Well... I made a few recommendations, like to look on the woofer thing or try and figure different things out, like for maybe where they might be able to find a place to sleep. But it was interesting to me because when we have farmers or different people are, you know, scolded for taking advantage of young workers, well, at least there's housing.
Right.
And then they're not getting people work visas to come. And I see it's the at 4:30, so you are listening to KKCR, Hanalei Kaqua Kilauea. These were nice young people. I'm sure they will figure out their scene somehow. But
still, it's tough. I mean, when you're young, you can bounce around a little bit better, but it's still, that doesn't sound like an easy path.
No, and being all by yourself as a girl, at least that there was four of them that had kind of come together.
Hmm. Well, looks like we've got a phone call coming in, and Felicia's going to handle that. And so we've got someone coming in on the phone line, and welcome to Out of the Box. This is,
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Welcome to Out of the Soapbox Live.
All right. Awesome. Hi, you guys. It's Victoria.
Hi.
I just wanted to touch on a couple of things. Firstly, do those folks from South America have a contact number? Do either of them have a phone?
No. I mean, I don't have their number.
Right. Are they listening to your show now? Do you know?
They could be. I told them I was going on the air.
Oh, good. Well, I've got a couple of thoughts about it. Firstly, the food banks happen almost every day in a different town for food if they're hungry, yeah? Hanalei on Friday, early in the morning. Wednesday at 4 o'clock, Church of the Pacific in Princeville. And then the question of housing or a place to rest their bod. There's work exchange farms on the North Shore. There's a couple lettuce farms. There's a couple ginger farms. And then there's the piece of property that I live on down at Anini. And it's owned by a really wonderful local guy. And I am there by myself now on a big piece of property. And I asked him that question of, in lieu of him taking $300 a month, that's all that he charges me a month to be there, that I needed help with the guinea grass. And would he give me a little aloha and let me find a couple folks that would do a work exchange? You know, it would be helpful for the land, you know, and mostly helpful for me. He wouldn't get any dough, but it would be good for his land. And I said, and then the next person that I found to come and be on the land, you know, we would get money, you know, from. But most people these days don't have even $300. It's really hard for a lot of folks to come up with $300. So he thought about it for about 2.5 seconds and said, sure, Rick. So if those folks are listening or there's any other, and I don't want to, maybe a ton of people will call me, and that is okay. I can't have a ton of people on the property, but I certainly would love and give my aloha to a couple folks that are able-bodied and can use a sickle greatly or a weed whacker, which I have, and kick ass on this piece of property that's really beautiful and secluded, and it would be really wonderful to have somebody or a couple people down there.
So what's the contact method?
For me?
Yeah.
To get a hold of me? I have a cell phone.
Okay.
Should I give it out to you now?
Well, I mean, like if somebody's listening, you know, there are so many people who have nowhere to go.
I was one of them at one point.
I picked them up a lot.
Yep.
And
my mom called me. She said I was in a fantasy world when I told her when I was homeless that I was going to find a beautiful piece of property somewhere on the North Shore with some wonderful owner that was going to either gift it to me or let me use it or rent it to me for very cheap. And she said I was in a fantasy world. And I said, Mom, you got to have some sort of faith. And then months later, I tracked this person down who I had heard about. So there are pieces of land out there. And it's just about willingness to go and go, you know, you got to go find them. I saw this piece of property. I went, somebody's got to own that. And, you know, it took me a month and a half of work to track this person down, but I did, and I am now living on it.
So I have a question, and that's why I want to be a little careful about how you put your contact point out.
Right.
A lot of times people get arrested for sleeping even on their own property in their vehicle.
On their own property?
On their own property. People who own their property can get arrested for camping on their own property if the neighbors complain.
I have no neighbors. I have wild pigs that are neighbors, and I don't think they know the pigs' number. I know what you're saying, though, and the police know me. They know that I live there.
Okay.
It's all good. I'm surrounded by Princeville property. The head guy from Princeville knows that I'm there.
So you're in good relations with your neighbors.
Indeed. You know, the close neighbors, I know them. I'm not in good relations. I try not to deal with neighbors.
So these
people
could maybe live in a tent at least for a little while, and then to work in Princeville, you could go up the trail, and I think,
in fact,
that is the hotel that is right there at the top of the trail.
Right, and I'm on the other end. I'm on the other side, you know, when you come from the highway and you go down. I'm before the park. So, you know, it's a little bit of a trek down the road to the end of the road and then cross the creek and hike up the trail to Princeville, but it's certainly better than looking for a spot on the side of the road every night to lay your head. It's a drag. And, you know, I just would like to put that out there, and I would hope that landowners that have so much land that is unused might think about the same thing. You know, it doesn't necessarily have to be a negative, and people don't have to be arrested. People just want to live, you know, and want to be safe. And so I will put my number out there.
Okay, what is it?
It's area code 808 212-4450.
212-4450, and I thank you for that very big heart, and I know who this is, and you're a very, very intelligent woman. You know so much. I do think, and I hope, that there is, you know, some initiatives that can go out. I think what we need in different zones on the island is designated camping areas where
Absolutely.
It is okay for longish-term camping.
Right, longer than the parks, which make you, you know, pull up your roots every 6 days. I understand that it's a state or a county park, but we should have a little tent city here. You know, like the man who owns the dog park property in Kilauea.
That's the Porters.
Let's have a people park somewhere, you know, and it's a tough one because landowners are just so scared that people are going to sue them and people are going to get weird. And we don't have to be weird and we don't have to sue.
That's certainly true.
Yeah. And the other thing about other places in affordable housing, something that I noticed recently, Foodland Shopping Center, Princeville, okay, the gravel parking lot that's below the concrete parking lot.
We were just talking about that.
Were you?
That they're doing that development for rentals.
Okay. See, I tuned in just at the point that you hadn't mentioned what it was that you were talking about, but
yeah.
It made me think about walking through the jungle here. There is a greenbelt part still here, and I walk through it often. I'm actually in the gravel parking lot as we speak, just went shopping, but I noticed the marker sticks the other day, about a month ago, and it said affordable housing
rentals
corner point. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So you know about that. When is that slated to start? Any idea?
It is still in the public hearing process, but it is slated to start, in the next year. And
oh, wow.
So, like, I am supportive of that. It's always nice to have open land. But in that case, if people get a place to actually have a home.
Yeah, where you can hang your hat.
I'm down with that,
I am, too.
I'm uncomfortable with the 34 McMansion spaces on the ridge line right in view of Hanalei.
Yikes.
Who will probably be fifth houses. But I appreciate that. I have another caller that's been holding.
Okay, Felicia.
But
hey,
I
thanks so much.
Appreciate your aloha. Thank you. Oh, and while you're
okay.
Still on the air, I want to announce to you and everybody else that Kauai Mini Golf, they have a free dinner tonight, and I've heard from different people when they do Christmas dinner and Thanksgiving dinner and stuff that it's great, it's fun. I know a number of the programmers here bring food there and join in it. So from 4 to 8 p.m. or until the food runs out at Kauai Mini Golf
in Kilauea.
It's now.
Right now. Huh,
now.
Okay.
That is great. Okay, thanks so much, you guys. Aloha, and Merry Christmas, and the happiest New Year ever.
Okay.
All right.
To you, too.
Bye-bye.
Aloha.
Thank you for standing by and being patient. Welcome to a live version of Out of the Soapbox.
Mm-hmm.
Unreal. Aloha, Jonathan and Felicia.
Yep, together.
Hi.
Again at last.
Merry Christmas.
Yes, and thanks for all the good vibes you've communicated through on your programs, your various programs this last year.
Well, we like to try and mix it up.
The question I have, and it sort of relates to the last issue that the lady was speaking about, is could you guys define for me, help put in context, this supposed the first law that King Kamehameha passed?
The law of the splintered paddle?
Yes, I've heard different interpretations. Like the interpretation that I buy into, it may not be true, is one that reads like this. The state cannot hassle you if you're in sort of a sketchy situation, i.e. homeless.
As you're traveling around on the roads and pathways.
Yeah, I'm not homeless, but I've been here 30 years, and early on in my sojourn on the Isle, I have been homeless, and it's a bit much. I think there should be some compassion for the folk. But anyway, do you guys have any interpretation that you could share with me?
Well, I might not get this completely right, but as I remember, Kamehameha saw a fisherman and his family, and he went aggressively towards them on the flats of the reef, and he got his foot stuck in a channel, a slot in the
right.
reef, and so then the fisherman came up and whacked him on the head with a paddle.
Right.
And kind of splintered it and broke
right.
it, and but Kamehameha couldn't do anything about it because his foot was stuck.
Right, that's what I heard.
And I guess he had enough time to sit and think about it, and he decided, it wasn't really right of me to approach them aggressively in the first place. Maybe I could pass a law that says, hey, let's just be decent to people and not threaten them.
Yeah, that's
my kind of superficial understanding.
Do you happen to know if that cuts any water with the powers that be, i.e. the district attorney, if you should go to court and, try to use that defense for... in general, like, you know, if you're like in a, as I said, like sort of a tenuous situation as either a homeless person or in some situation like that?
We might have an Akamai listener who can call in, and I would like really a Kanaka Akamai listener to call in also for strengthening the interpretation of the law of the splintered paddle. But I would think if anybody can rest on it, it would be somebody with the bloodline, the Hawaiian
Amen.
Bloodline. I don't think that they would extend that. I don't think it's any way written into the legislation. There is a spirit of aloha law written into the Constitution and stuff, but it doesn't seem to be honored very well. And, you know, as we eliminate public bathrooms and have laws against sleeping in your cars. Like when I first moved here, people were kind of crashing underneath catamarans and in their cars. And, it, you know, because I was really involved with the surf community, and people
right.
would sort of sleep wherever. And it didn't seem to be a problem, but that doesn't seem to happen anymore. I mean, it's hard to even live in a shack. So, but maybe we'll have somebody who has better mana'o on that. I do have another caller waiting.
And I just brought another sure. general question. When you're speaking with the Kanaka Maole, the original folk whose bloodlines go back, did you ask them, you know, what their opinion in terms of the motto of the state, i.e., you know, the life of the land is perpetuated righteousness? It seems like in all these issues regarding GMO and any other issue, this seems should be the guiding principle.
Yeah,
but
it seems
it's sort of course, legalistically, perhaps doesn't hold any water, but doesn't seem like there's much reference to that.
They're certainly not focusing on the life of the land. They're looking at the land as a sort of inert medium in which to grow stuff, like more like dirt than land.
Or commodity.
Yeah. commodity.
The major change I've seen in Palaniki is that a lot of rich white folks, and I'm not a rich white folk, I'm a white folk, have come to the island, and I really don't like their attitude. You know, they're all la-di-da and whatever, so, but God bless them. I just wish that, Kauai was like, at least a Niki slowed the rate of development down. But thanks for listening to my concerns.
Okay, thank
all right.
you.
Yeah, thank
Bye-bye.
You for calling in, and season's greetings
thank
to you.
Thank you, Jonathan.
Hey, you're welcome.
Bye-bye, Felicia.
Bye-bye.
And we've got another caller who's been so patiently standing by. Welcome to Out of the Soapbox Live.
Hello?
Hello, you're on the air.
Yes, I agree. It's sad, the disparity between the rich and the poor, the homeless and people who have nice places to live, or even a simple tent, you know, can be a luxury. I mean, I don't know if there's one county in the entire United States that allows people to legally sleep, except in the daytime.
Is that right?
I mean, I don't know. You can, I think the law is about sleeping. I mean, if you're sitting at Hyena Beach Park or Black Pot and you're just sitting there on the lawn wide awake at midnight, I don't think there's anything they can do.
Yeah, but don't be sleeping.
Yeah, but don't be sleeping. And it's just the most like, I don't know how you describe the law except the prejudice and bias. It's all about money, you know, and the police and the system, the courts, they all cater to this principle of the haves and have-nots. And it's very sad for people that just want to sleep.
It's also kind of ironic, too, because, you know, so much of what's going on around us, it seems like anyway, it's suggesting that we go to sleep, stay asleep, keep sleeping, don't wake up. So you would think that they wouldn't have a problem with someone actually being asleep. You would think,
yeah.
Oh, hey, I'm just going with the program, man.
You're not robbing. You're not beating anybody up. You're not creating, you know.
No pilikia.
Yeah, you know, you're just doing your inalienable right is to sleep. And, you know, I mean, the only way around it is to be some kind of saintly person who doesn't need to sleep. You know, or sleep in the daytime and stay up all night, even though that can be hard on your body. You know, it can be a lonely world, especially if you're all alone. All at night, you're on this beautiful island. And it's like you're the only person on the island. It's like you're a castaway or something. You know, but I mean, it can enrich your life spiritually if you could if you could meet that challenge of being all by yourself, staying up all night. And then, or, you know, some really hardy people that I admire, I mean, way more than, I mean, you just got to admire them. I mean, people sometimes go down to the beach because they can't, a tent is too obvious. They'll sleep under a piece of plastic, a tarp, you know, and then you got to deal with the mosquitoes. And it's just like, it's torture. I mean, and it's just so sad that people cannot, it's against the law to I mean, your topic is a good topic. I don't know when it will ever end, you know, this disparity, only when the economy totally collapses.
Well, I hope that there is an awakening. And when you're talking, like after the hurricane, even though we had all the housing wrecked, it was interesting how so much good came out of everybody and how it was like hitting a giant reset on the value system here. And at a national level, there's some phenomenal amount, like two or three times as many empty houses as there are homeless
exactly.
people. And I think there's...
I think that's true on the island
I'm
as
sure
well.
I'm sure that's true on the island.
Because
like,
there's a lot of houses that are sort of lost in escrow.
Mm-hmm.
Or
and if
people like Kathy Ham Young and people that lived, I mean, Ty Hook back in the old days, I mean, people could, like, do work trades with tarot and live in tarot shacks. You know, which was like a really, you know, wonderful thing for a lot of people to be able to do that didn't have the cash money. But I hope your friends can find a place, you know, either on the farms that you're suggesting. And that was awfully noble of that woman to call up on the show. I admire her. If she's still listening, I admire her a lot.
Yeah.
And more people should be like that, you know, if they have the opportunity. And thanks for all the great shows this year. Have a Merry Christmas, both of you.
Okay, Merry Christmas to you, too.
Thank you, caller. Appreciate that.
Aloha.
And the phone lines are open, 826-7771. If you have a comment or a question or you want to chime in and join the conversation.
And speaking of joining the conversation, I want to acknowledge that Larry came in and put your mic up near you, Larry.
Hi.
So he's come in
coming
and
in late.
Helped me on a number of shows and always appreciate your mano'o. And hey, Eric is here. Hi, Eric. So Eric Cannon is here too. And Eric, I want to, as he's setting up his mic, really acknowledge you for winning again on the
mat,
the jiu-jitsu thing. I think that was like a world level. Can you touch your mic? Do I have you up?
Does that work?
Nope.
Maybe.
Yeah.
There we go.
So that was
go.
That like a world.
Tell
class?
Us about that.
Yeah.
So it was the world championship for that association, but it was the North American Grappling Association. But so. There's several associations that throw their world championships.
Kind of like the World Series, only has American baseball teams in it.
Yeah, but for instance, like there's the IBJJFs. That's
which
like,
we all know stands for.
The let's see, that's the International Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu Federation.
All right.
And that's a little bit bigger of a competition. And this starting 2014, I'm gonna try and start going to all those tournaments, but. Most of those are on the mainland, so I'm going to start saving my money now.
Yeah, travel expenses.
Yeah.
So was there people from other countries in this?
Yeah, there was several people from other countries.
And you got first place.
Yeah.
In what weight division were you grappling in?
I was in the 155 to 175.
Boy, that's about how much I weigh. I would not want to be grappling you.
Yeah, and I'm normally 175 to 200. That's my normal fighting class. But I was figuring since I'm going to the world championship, I better lose a few pounds. So I lost like 15 pounds in 2 weeks just working out every day, eating pretty much nothing but salads.
Wow.
Well, congratulations.
Be kind to your body.
Yeah.
And right. You know, we can now see who all's listening to us, and we got like 7 or 8 people from Japan. So aloha, Japan. Actually,
wow.
More.
Yeah, konnichiwa.
Yeah. How do you say Merry Christmas in Japanese? Does anybody know?
I we can do it in Hawaiian.
Melikilikimaka.
Yeah, Melikilikimaka.
So aloha, Japan. Thank you. And I just acknowledging them because they are sort of one of the very founders and bringing out martial arts. It's a big piece on that.
Even though Brazilian jiu-jitsu is Brazilian, it came originally from Japan.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, we all sort of influence each other everywhere. Larry, what's been new with you this week? Are you you're always helping out on so many different elements and know lots of things. What's been your focus?
Probably mostly my daughter. She's off of school. She's a teenager and senior in high school, so it's the last hurrah for dad to spend time with his daughter before she goes off into the real world.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the holiday time. It makes you reflect the end of the year about things. And
what kind of reflections have you been having?
I think it's been an amazing year of I keep running into people repeatedly, and even today ran into a bunch of people that this year in particular was a profound year to make them look inside, to assess what they're doing, to think about, am I doing the right thing? And today I got here late, and I was with a fascinating man, and he's in his 50s, and we were talking about Native Hawaiian, and talking about how his focus has shifted back to what he believing in his childhood. And I think a lot of people are trying to decide whether their pathway is taking them to a point of success and redefining what success means to them.
Mm-hmm.
And so this year has been one of those issues, one of those years filled with issues where that make you think, if nothing else, and
mm-hmm.
Make you prioritize. And one of the things that I see, which I hope we can get away from, is having to pick a side versus trying to pick a solution or create a path to a solution that seems to make sense and work for so many. And there's so many people in need, and picking a side just doesn't seem to work. The last part of the conversation I had with this gentleman was, he asked me what political party I belong to, and I said I don't. I truly vote independent, and so did he. But in the old days, you'd pick a party and
just stick with it,
and blindly vote for it. And now you have to just reassess. And so it's mostly a year of reflection and trying to decide where to go, or as other people call it, midlife crisis.
Well, you're speaking about going off to college, and my son is home from college, and so are so many other young friends of mine are home, and it's really, really a nice thing seeing people come back. And I know for me, probably the biggest Christmas present that I'll get this season is just seeing his difference in assessment. I think he was really excited to go off to the mainland to college. He's never lived there ever, and not that he's not positive on it, but before he left, I sort of felt like he's likely to end up getting a job and living there. That's, I think, every parent's fear, is their kids move away
and then never see him again, ever.
Well,
ever, ever.
Kind of, or do you move and follow the kid, or what goes on? But and we'll see by the time he's done with school. But I asked him about it, and I said, do you think you'll probably want to be working there or being there? And he just said no. Not that he isn't even having a good time.
So what did he mean by that? It sounds, I'm getting a mixed message there.
That it's nicer here.
Okay.
I'm new to the island, living full time. I've been coming here for decades, but my daughter and I just moved here. And when you live here, it's different than coming as a tourist. It doesn't matter. We were coming 3-4 times a year. It doesn't matter. There's a mindset that's different here that you really appreciate when the contrast is there. And your son's, I'm sure, saying that what's valued seems to, it just doesn't, it's a superficially appealing, but it doesn't make sense, and it doesn't give you the sense of contentment.
Yeah, it's kind of shiny but hollow.
So very hollow.
Let's say that the continent is a big place, and so not every space.
No, uniformly. Uniformly, just homogeneously. There's no differentiation.
So funny, sometimes I'll hear people say,
well, in fact, it's hemispheres.
Oh, wow. Right.
Yeah, it's the whole Western Hemisphere.
Yeah. People will say, well, you know, on the mainland, and now I've kind of really learned to say the continent, because for many people, it's not their mainland. You know, people who are historically from here, generationally from here, why is that their mainland? It's not. There's so much power in words. I've found that the listeners have really shaped my whole way of framing things.
You know, that's interesting, because it's a subtle point, but when you said it, something just clicked. To call it the mainland prioritizes it.
Yeah, over all other mainland.
Yeah, and maybe it's the minor land. I'm not trying to get too woo-woo.
Slamming that place,
right.
But I mean, like, how do we look at things? I know that,
we could just call it North America.
I think that, you know, it's almost like we need to be beyond governments, and that the governments seem to think that they're beyond governments. When we look at the Trans-Pacific Partnership,
sure.
Seemingly, I got several different pieces of information, probably haven't checked it tightly enough, but it looks like that the Trans-Pacific Partnership fast-tracked through the Senate. It kind of reminds me, yesterday was the 100-year anniversary of the Federal Reserve Act.
Yeah.
And,
Dave Thoreau was trying to get us to sing happy birthday about that. I'm like, Dave, I'm not going to sing happy birthday to the Federal Reserve.
No,
I'm sorry.
I mean, it's like a coup on the country. And so they did that on the 23rd of December when most of the Congress had left.
Yeah, they adjourned.
They had adjourned, so they got a majority of the minority, and the people who stayed to vote yes on that stayed specifically to vote yes on that. So that was like...
This is all back in 1913.
1913, but so we're on the 100-year anniversary of that, and that's kind of a really heavy thing. And just how we frame things, even like what day of the year it is, how we look at things. Like, we are going to play Jonathan's Christmas song, which is from Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, which is a nice little song. I chose a medium song. Like, I have talked about a few scriptures. I have like one more that I'll share on this show today, because it's this holiday is about Christ, but like what?
Allegedly.
There's all this war
on Christmas that you hear so much about, and you know, it seems like for some people it's just a temple to consumerdom or something. But I like where you're going with that.
Well, I mean, for Christians, it's about Christ. That's why it says Christmas. It's the mass of Christ. So, you know, there's that piece there. But words are really powerful, and how we use words. So even when we call something a state or the nation, now I find that I'm saying America or the USA or the continent of the United States or the continental United States, because I realize that by using the, I'm starting to get why people get angry that have a history here. And as I know more and more Kupuna, they predate statehood.
They predate the state.
They predate the state.
Yeah.
And so that, like, when my choice of words says I'm buying in to the shift, and I like to, like, sit without judgment and just simply say things how it is. So there's the continent of the United States, not necessarily the mainland. So anyway, that's a little philosophy. You're listening to KKCR, Hanalei, KAQA, Kilauea, K284AL, Holly Eva, and Jonathan, Felicia, and Eric with Larry Schneider also in here. We're calling it Out of the Soapbox Live, because we've got like
a blended show.
Well, the thing about Eric is he's transcended the continent, the mainland, or a state when he's the world champ.
When he's the world champ, he's done
so
it all.
He is the beacon that we should look towards.
There you go. And Out of the Soapbox Live is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with Bali High Realty, Anahola Stringed Instruments, Aya's Garden Supply, and Al Pastor Tacos.
Coldwell Banker, Bali High Realty, and Hanalei, serving Kauai since 1978, providing personalized real estate sales and rental services. Coldwell Banker, Bali High Realty also supports KKCR and the Kauai Independent Food Bank. More information at BaliHigh.com or by calling 826-7244.
Anahola Stringed Instruments, still making guitars, ukulele, and violins one at a time from Kauai's ancient koa. Every tree has its own song. Time-honored designs and precision-built custom orders. Beginning and master instrument building classes. Prompt and complete setup, repair, restoration, and reforestation. Anahola Stringed Instruments proudly supports KKCR. AnaholaStringedInstruments.com or 822-1645.
Aya's Garden All-Natural Garden and Greenhouse Supply in Kapa'a, down Kukui Street from the Dragon Building. Fertilizers, amendments, soil, seeds, garden and farm organic growing supplies. Open Monday through Saturday. More information at 822-7333 or visit Aya's Garden on Facebook.
Al Pastor Tacos supports KKCR across the street from the craft fair in Kapa'a by the beach. Al Pastor Tacos serves fresh grilled local fish, steak, chicken, and pork tacos and burritos in the Al Pastor style. Also a garden salad and choices for the kids. Open every day from 11 to 4. Takeout orders welcome. Al Pastor Tacos, authentic Mexican food. 652-6953.
And mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, underwriters, you guys, in conjunction with people just like you who are listening, who pledge into the show and other shows, I mean, that's really what helps keep community radio healthy. And there's no reason why you can't go to kkcr.org right now and find your way to that donate button and give a little light into this holiday, this season of light, for what we're doing here that lasts all year long. I just want to say thank you to all the underwriters and all the people who called in and all the callers and you guys, because that's what makes the station a station. And it's kind of, it's a blessing really to have this here on the island. So, I don't want to underappreciate that.
Yeah. There's so much to appreciate. And I have one more scripture that I am going to share.
Lay it on us, sister.
I'm going to share another scripture. This one has always meant a whole lot to me. And it's from Romans 8:28. And that's, God causes all things to work together for good for those who are called according to his purpose. Which means, like, as long as we feel in our heart what's the right thing to be doing, it, you know, almost anything that's a bummer, it's going to work out in a way where it's a positive. You can turn it into something that works for the good. And so you just kind of have to have faith with that. A lot of times when things don't seem quite the way we want. We have another caller.
Aloha, caller. You're on the air. Welcome to Out of the Soapbox Live.
Aloha. I would like to just say I heard this thing, and I'm not so sure whether it's reality or not. But
well, it's always good to check in.
Sounded like a really great thing that the state of Utah was doing.
What is that?
They decided how much money it was costing them dealing with homeless people. And they looked at what it would cost to actually put them in some, state home, just assisted housing. You know, there's stuff like that on the island. And I know we don't have much, and it would be nice if there was more, but my point is they decided that they looked at the costs, and it was actually a little bit cheaper if they just put all the homeless people in homes. And then they actually had people who, they have programs set up to try to get these people to some sort of a job or some sort of a career or whatever they, to be self-sufficient and pay for this, $16,000 a year home that the state was going to give these people. And then it even say that even if the people don't replicate or get this next career or whatever, they still get the home. They they give them the home, and then they try to give them some opportunity to make a situation for them to better themselves and provide for themselves. But even if they can't do that, they still get to stay in the place.
So and do you know which community this is? Where in the States is this?
I think it's a state. It's a statewide thing.
In Hawaii?
No,
Utah.
Utah. Okay, because
yeah.
I'll look it up. We need to be looking at examples, you know, at when we give the county ideas.
Yeah, concrete examples. And so this sounds like it might be a good one.
Yeah, so, you know, aloha. Thanks for doing what you guys do. And, yeah.
Mele kalikimaka.
Absolutely. It's a great, great year, great time. And we...
Thank you.
All right, thank you so much.
Aloha.
Aloha. I want to say in Detroit that, and in Florida, where they have so much housing that is going into deep disrepair.
Sure.
It's different than our excess housing. Our excess housing here is typically mansions.
Right, or little McMansions.
Or McMansions, but they're in these places where it brings all the property values down and creates a lot of problems. You know, it definitely works better to put people in the houses rather than to have them...
Yeah, just stay hollow.
Just stay hollow and get destroyed. Aloha, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, my friends. It's Victoria calling back real quick. It's hard to be quick, though, because my heart is so into this issue. And I think it's so very important, along with the GMO, which is so very important. But the reason that it's so hard to find housing here is because the government and all the richy riches have made it that way. They don't want us homeless people to have tent cities. They don't want us homeless people to have areas where there are communities that are getting along together and making it off the grid. They don't make any money off of us that way, you see. But if Bob Marley was still alive, his whole place over there in Jamaica would be working that way. And we can do it too. But we have to initiate it. We have to be the ones to step up or have our friends who happen to have money and have a piece of land knock on their shoulders and go, hey, Joe, you know what? You know the 10 acres over there that you got the two horses on? How about a third of it? Let's do something wonderful with it. Let's let some people live, you know. Let's let some people be happy and not stress out. And because the government ain't going to do it, you guys. They're just not. They're working against us, you know. Maybe a couple of them are going to, they're all a bunch of pretenders, you know that. So we have to do it, and that's why I put that information and aloha out there about where I live, you know, because I want to start it. And I would like the continuance to happen with other people. So you folks with, you know, a lot more money, you know, find it in your heart. Find something that's real and put it out there, and let's make this world a better place for us right here in Kauai. Let's start here today. Okay, you guys. Thanks
okay,
so much.
Thank you.
Yep.
And she brings up some really excellent points, and I know that at some level county planning turns their head the other way and allows enclaves of people to be living in different places. It's not all heartless, but that we need to change the initiatives. We need to create an initiative for the county that really does promote this, because where I'm in quite a lot of agreement with her is there's an industry around selling the land.
Well,
and
there's also
and keeping
there's
the value up on the
yeah,
land.
Yeah, the value up high, because that's where the tax base is.
That's where the tax base is.
Right.
And like this year, we're $8 million in the hole. But I think our whole economic system is fraying.
It's a little
you know?
Bit keep.
Well, it's fragile right now.
Yeah.
There's a lot that's kind of falling apart with it, so we have to work on that.
Papakahi was what. Yeah, well, you smash the problem away.
Right, just beat it. If I don't share your viewpoint, I'll take a sledgehammer and I'll crush you.
Yeah,
it's kind of silly versus trying to get a solution. But when I hear people talking about sensitive subjects, there's always a contrary view. So it obviously to get housing for people seems fundamental. On the other hand, there's a group of people who have views about the concept of entitlement and, you know, why should you be entitled to free land or free house? And somewhere in there has to be a balance. And the problem is, whatever your viewpoint is, if you're passionate about it, you believe in it, how do you get people of varying viewpoints to get down a similar pathway.
Well, sometimes when I listen to people who take that viewpoint, they'll say, well, these people aren't working hard, they don't deserve more. Because I think I identify with the person who's poor because I grew up as a poor child. And so to me, sometimes I'll think that I'm looking at people who were basically born on third base, and so they feel like they got a home run when they just do the minimum, right? And everything works out.
And they're
the 1%, though. That's not a lot of people who were born on third base that way, I don't think.
No, but their pay scale is factors greater than, and anticipation is factors greater than a really hardworking person.
Sure.
Who wants, you can get a lot of really hardworking people that are have good intention, and it's difficult for them to make more than $10 to $20 an hour, and the people born on third base, the thought of getting a job for $20
anything like that,
you know, they're 6, 7, 8 figure people.
Well, and then I will say, like, my own children, I try really hard to at least get them on second base. I mean, I want them. There's a lot of things, like, just having stability in your childhood, whether it's affluent stability, having a home to come to and always being fed, that wasn't something that I always had.
Let me propose a philosophical question to throw out there. Is a school teacher struggles to put money in the bank and can play a profound role in your development of your children, yet a venture capital person who parlays money from different groups is in the multi-billion-dollar business. How do these values get set? How do we allow it? And government, a lot of times, subsidizes it. You're talking about
through the tax code and such.
Yeah, a lot of the issues are shut down by the government, which poorly handles their money, and it really takes a fundamental shift in it, and it's going to take a big effort to try to reprioritize and come up with positive directions to go into, because I'm not sure why a farmer who produces food
that people can eat
or a teacher has to struggle from paycheck to paycheck, and a venture capital person is a multi-billionaire by playing with other people's money.
Yeah, we seem to have a system that values are out of whack.
Well, why, at the risk of beating a dead horse, but why do we subsidize the 6 chemical companies on the island and allow them to get land at $50 an acre? Why don't you offer some of that land to some of the people who would farm it, remediate the soil?
We got some callers.
And be able to generate a living by selling the food from it.
Well, let's see what the callers have to perhaps say in response to that.
Okay, and this is our first caller. Aloha, you're on the air.
Hello?
Yes.
You know, it's about how much material wealth that you want. It's you know, versus, like, you know, it's harder to dig a ditch, you know, for minimum wage than to be like what the other man was calling a venture capitalist, even though he might know how to use a computer and he might have a college degree in business or something like that.
A venture capitalist typically would have a lot of money and know how to manage money and how to leverage money. That would be the strength of a venture capitalist.
Yeah, and they make a huge amount of money compared to, like, it's harder work to dig a ditch or be a farmer. And of course,
I don't know.
Thing is that they get paid less money than some guy who makes some good business deals.
Harder physical work.
Deals, right? But, you know, the thing about homelessness is that I admire about a lot of people, and this is what society doesn't admire, but I certainly do, is people that are willing to do with just a little bit. Like, how much, like, is a tent? A nylon tent, it costs $200 or $300. If you take good care of it, can last a number of years. I mean, and there's a lot of people, like me included, who do, or I'm lucky enough to rent a room, you know, and I like my fan, and I have the creature comforts that I like, and I can have pets where I live, and they mean a lot to me. But in my heart of hearts, you know, because Hawaii is such a wonderful place, and the weather is so wonderful, you know, I could live so easily in just a tent. I wouldn't need a refrigerator. I mean, if there was public restrooms like you were mentioning, I mean, it's so the lameness of the county to take away those public bathrooms and fine people outrageous sums of money. You know, it's a joke, right? But, you know, you have to admire people who are willing to be homeless, not that they're lazy, but that they're willing, a lot of these people are willing to do without a lot of things that are necessary for some people.
Sure, without a lot of creature comforts.
Right, and
because it's almost like, God, if I could live in Hawaii and live in a tent on somebody's property without getting shot or put in jail, you know, I'd give up my car. I'd give up my, basically, I would need my all my things that I have, all my material things that I have, just so I could feel, like, secure. You know, that at least I'd have a roof over my head.
I think that's one of my problems, though, with it, though, Danny, though.
You know,
like,
Hold on.
We only have one person talk at a time. That way we can all understand each other.
I didn't have a button pushed. He couldn't hear you. Go ahead.
Danny.
Hold on, Danny.
Imagine if everyone thought like that, though. I mean, it's a romantic idea, and I definitely, a lot of people do that, and I don't think it's necessarily wrong, but, I mean, I've met so many people, especially, you know, I'm 23, almost 24, and I've met a lot of people my age that have moved here from the mainland. I'm sorry, the
continental United States.
Yes,
you can say whatever you want.
United States, and they believe that everybody should just be given everything. They should be able to just set up on any piece of land and make a garden there and live there, and everything should just be given to them, and everything should be perfect.
But Eric, somewhere in the middle, there's got to be a solution.
Exactly.
And that's not a practical solution, and the other end of the spectrum is not
exactly
a practical
we're
solution.
Nowhere is perfect. Where we're at is not perfect, and that's not perfect. But, I mean, I just don't want – nobody wants – I mean, the – bushes packed with people, just filled with tents and
poop.
Exactly, poop, trash, and you know, just we don't want a bunch of poor people filling up on the beaches, and then pretty soon Kauai becomes just kind of a poor person haven.
Well, now you're talking practically, and that's what I was trying to allude to before, is that you can be individuals can be passionate in their position, but that mm-hmm. doesn't work in a collective society.
Yeah.
In a collective society, there's some practicality. So, how do you keep the land clean? How do you pay for the electricity? How do you provide all that stuff? And so, rather than to, you know, I think Eric and I are on this very similar page
to find
a solution.
Do you have a final thought on that?
I want to say it's either a haven of like little tailor camps, a few tailor camps here and there. And like I say, like the island can only handle so much population, whether it's rich condos on the bluff up there at Princeville.
Yeah, that's true.
And golf courses. Versus little havens for hippies to live in tents, you know, it basically comes down to people that want to live dignified. They want to be nice. They don't want to steal and rob. You know, these are the most important things. You know, or you acquire the saintly path where where you don't need anything, even food and water. You're like a breatharian or something like that. Because homelessness has been around from medieval times.
No,
Danny.
It was invented 25 years ago. That's written down.
Danny, can I ask you?
I'm going to go because I dealt with this when I first came to Hawaii when I was 17. Like, well, how am I going to make ends meet? You know, but now I'm 62, and I'm still willing – if worse came to worse, rather than leave Hawaii, I'll stay up all night at the county park or and the public property. I won't get busted for sleeping. You know, I'll become this person who doesn't sleep. If food becomes a problem, I'll become a person who doesn't need to eat. You know,
or some other
alternative versus somebody else telling me I have to leave. You know. Anyway,
so
have a great
day. Thank you so much. Well, that's, you know, I mean, I think it's actually a Christmas point. It reminds me a little bit of a Charles Dickens version of Christmas. But it's poignant that we come to this in this discussion because it is such a powerful issue that we're surrounded by.
Sure, and it doesn't seem like there's easy answers. You can't just wave a magic wand and everything's all hunky-dory for everyone.
You want to be compassionate, yet the practicality and some of the limitations are we live in a society with rules.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the struggle, is you got governmental rules, you got legislative rules, but we live in it. So Danny's viewpoint, for example, isn't shared by 100% of the population.
Well, this is my viewpoint. This is something that I would like to see done as an initiative for an ordinance for the county, is that to buy at the bottom of the market. You know, when we have these foreclosure sales and there is distressed properties, and I think that, like, if the homeless or the county housing would be just buying up some of these properties, even doing short sales, and then having them just peppered around wherever they are, that actually smooths out the bottom of the real estate market. And then they really do have a very great program with their buyer readiness or in their rentals. And so instead of having concentrations of housing, if they were just simply shoring up the bottom of the real estate market, that's an example of how to create more county housing.
Going back to about 20 minutes earlier in the show, you were bringing up things like TPP and
Trans-Pacific Partnership.
Yeah, and governmental intervention and Federal Reserve. And if a lot of these things are out of the control of individuals.
Yeah,
and,
they're way out of control.
So you have a Federal Reserve who...
Is not government.
It's a private entity. Trans-Pacific
Partnership is not government. And those are kind of two in the same ilk. So those are super government.
And they regulate the economy in a way that smart money or big money or the venture capital people can take advantage of disadvantaged moments for individuals.
Sure.
Purchase their houses, be their second, third, fourth house, or an investment property, and the indigenous people are hurt by that. And there's something from a compassionate viewpoint that doesn't make a lot of sense by allowing money experts or manipulators, however you want to do it, to profit off of people's adversity.
That's called calamity capitalism is what people are referred to that as.
Or it's called success, depending on
sure.
which TV show you watch.
That's right. But like you use the word regulate the economy, I put forward manipulate the economy.
Manipulate.
They're manipulating the economy to benefit a certain class of
well,
people.
Well, that's capitalism. You make money by longing a commodity and shorting a commodity.
It's not free market capitalism.
No, it's not free market.
It's not true. It's because the people who are in charge of making the rules have made the playing field on an angle.
Well, they profit on both sides of the investment. They profit at
the
buying low and selling
going.
High,
sure.
and they profit buying high, betting that they're going to devalue. And if you have the power to inflate an economy or de-escalate an economy.
Yeah, and the financial instruments to advantage or to leverage that. Yeah.
So there's a huge difference between capitalism and democracy and freedom.
And we try and make it be all synonymous. And we didn't even really ever have a democracy in the United States. It is a republic right?
Yeah, it's a democratic republic.
It's a democratic republic.
Whatever that means.
Well, it means that you vote for a few people who then you trust well enough to be part of making those decisions. And
right,
I think,
but with free market politics, you have the people who control what is available to be voted on. And then you can choose between Tweedledum and Tweedledee, and that's not going to get us anywhere out of how we're stuck.
You know, the cool part about Kauai is the third choice could be Tweedledee, where Kauai can have... The unique part about this is there are a group of people that would like to see something positive happen that makes sense. And I think in a small scale, you could develop these micro communities that
I agree with you.
Potential to grow.
I think we've got a lot of room for building solutions. And after we take the break of the bottom of the hour, I think we should shift our focus to what are solutions that are coming up, because there are a lot of solutions. So you are listening to KKCR, Hanalei, KAQA, Kilauea, K284, AL, Holly Eva. You have Jonathan J., Larry Schneider, Eric Cannon, and Felicia in the house. And I think we need a song break. We're going to move to Burl Ives with Holly Jolly Christmas.
Well, you can't really get away with playing this too many other times of the year. So.
I know, and I really, when I was a kid, was very strong on Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. And let's see if I've got this set up right.
Come on, Burl. Bring it home
for
us.
Come on, Burl. He's going to come up here, and I listened to this all the time as a child. I always looked forward to this show. I might have gotten the wrong one.
Have a holly jolly.
Oh, there he is.
It's the best time of the year. I don't know if there'll be snow, but have a cup of cheer. Have a holly jolly Christmas. And when you walk down the street, say hello to friends you know and everyone you meet. Ho, ho, the mistletoe hung where you can see. Somebody waits for you, kiss her once for me. Have a holly jolly Christmas, and in case you didn't hear, oh, by golly, have a holly jolly Christmas this year. Have a holly jolly Christmas. It's the best time of the year. Have a holly jolly Christmas. And when you walk down the street, say hello to friends you know and everyone you meet. Oh, ho, the mistletoe hung where you can see. Somebody waits for you, yes sir, once for me. Have a holly jolly Christmas, and in case you didn't hear, oh by golly, have a holly jolly Christmas this year.
And Holly Jolly Christmas. Yay, we're going to have one of those. Looks like we got a caller on the air.
Aloha, caller. Welcome to Out of the Soapbox Live.
And you are straight on the air.
Is that me?
It's
yes,
you.
Yes, you are on the air.
You never know, yeah.
Well, that's the beauty of radio,
sorry.
Yeah?
Yeah, it is. You just never know. Okay, is it Larry that's there with you?
Yes.
Okay, I kind of recognize the voice, but wasn't sure who that was. But anyway, he asked earlier or made some reference to, you know, well, what do we do? And yet you are asking for solutions. And, you know, I read something from a sharper tool than myself a number of years ago. And I think some of the solution people, you know, we tend to get stuck in this, oh, it's just so impossible to fix this mess. I sometimes find myself living that scenario that it just it's too broke.
Well, some days they're not as good as others.
Yeah, right. So anyway, what was brought forward that I think is doable with some effort. We talk about government. I'm not a big fan of government, whether it's supplying housing for the homeless or anything else that they do. They just don't seem to be able to do it without making a mess of it, at least in the present iteration of quote-unquote government. But so this was some of the things that I heard that could be probably make some pretty substantial improvements pretty quickly. Number one, term limits for all politicians. Now, people say, oh, we do have term limits. If you don't like them, you vote them out. And we can see how well that has worked for us.
But we do have term limits now for
county council.
The county council and the mayor.
Yep.
Yeah, I know. But I'm talking about radical with it, kind of. Like, one term, thank you very much for your service. Now go out and get a real job. No lifetime health care. No, you know, lifetime, you know, killer retirement. Yeah, I'm talking, you know, federal and state kind of thing with this sort of thing. But that's where a lot of our problems come from, is from the very top. So term limits would be one thing. There's been item number two of the public-funded elections.
Amen, brother.
It's been said and studied many times that the phenomenal amount of public money that would be saved by just, you know, somebody figuring out, okay, if you know, it seems reasonable that if you're running for congressman, you should spend $2 million, and the federal government's going to give it to you if you qualify with whatever substantial support from the public you might get, and that's it. Third thing, and I'm not sure if this is on the list or something that came out of my brain, something that had to do with, you know, just no corporate lobbying. That could have some issues with it, but that might be a radical solution. And I think I was thinking about that, and I think part of that solution would probably have to employ the repeal of the Citizens United decision.
Yeah, for starters.
That corporations are human, if not superhuman.
And that is being challenged.
And I think it's got to be. And I think some of this stuff, let's get radical, because things are so screwed up that if we don't get radical, this could be a mess for everything. I think some of these things, like no, for graft and corruption in high office, should be perhaps a treasonable offense that maybe should be, needs to kind of make some examples of some of these nitwits that end up in high public office, and maybe it should be a capital offense.
Well, caller, do you know what radical means? The word itself?
Go ahead, Jonathan.
It means to go to the root, to the radius, to the heart of the problem. And so it doesn't mean necessarily extreme, but it means taking the solution right to where it needs to be had, the root of the problem, not the branches or the leaves.
Okay, I think I used that term correctly then.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So some of the stuff, I mean, it's really simple. I mean, term limits, public-funded elections, it's not going to take a 2,800-page bill to make those things happen.
Well, they purposely
It's going to be pretty hard to get the people in power now to agree to it, but it's an extremely simple thing. Senators, 6 years and you're out. Congressman, 4 years and you're out. Next, thank you for your service. Go get a real job. It's been swell.
Thank you.
And you get people in there that would perhaps do things that were good for the country and the people, instead of people that are looking for to get on the gravy train.
Yeah, and maybe it could be 8 years, so that there's enough time for experience.
Let's make it 4 years.
Four years. Okay. All right.
I'm getting radical.
Okay.
Okay, hey, thanks for the show. Doing great.
Thank you.
Hey, season's greetings to you, caller.
Yeah.
Melly Kaliki Maka to y'all.
We have a couple, I think, good shows coming up that are focused on solutions.
Oh, really? What do you have in mind, Felicia?
I mean, this is, we're going to have an Out of the Soapbox Live on Thursday, and Jonathan's show, too, this Thursday. The name of the film, that we have a film producer.
It's called Bringing It Home.
Bringing It Home, and that film is about?
It's all about industrial hemp.
So that's a possibility. We've had some really great Manao from callers that say why hemp isn't necessarily a good use. Maybe it's really thirsty or there's different challenges, but just exploring hemp is a possibility. And when is that show going to be filmed? I mean, the film going to be shown?
It's going to be January 6th.
And where's that at?
I believe it's going to be at the...
KCC?
No, I think
Church of the Pacific?
I think it's Church of the Pacific.
Okay, so bringing it home, and we should really invite our legislators and council people, because I think the more that we actually listen in all together, and then, you know, being a step ahead of me, who are some of our guests on Thursday?
We've got Dee Morikawa, who is from, I believe, the 16th District. Okay. She's a house rep.
From the west side.
From the west side. And then Derek Kawakami, who's from the 14th District or the North Shore.
Yeah, that would be Kauai Hau Road to the north. And
yep.
I'm stoked that they're going to be on the show because we are coming into the legislative season, which is starting January 15th. And what I learned last year following that capital.gov, HawaiiCapital.gov, which is a great, we've got this incredible online resource for citizens to be paying attention to what's coming through. And there's going to be some classes coming up really soon called Public Access Room.
That's, oh, to help people better learn how to take advantage of that.
Suzanne Marinelli, she comes and teaches that. I took that last year. It made a world of difference in learning how to be able to follow it. But what I learned is that basically all the bills have to be introduced on day one. You don't come up with a bill a month through the season. There's 90 days of legislative working time, spreads out to about 4 months, and it is a grueling marathon where they have so many bills and so many things that they're working on. So it's really important that they come out of the box with the bills that they need. And so...
You mean out of the gate?
Out of the gate. All right, out of the gate. So I was trying to make a pun. I guess it didn't work. But something that I believe... that Derek initiated this, so I'm hearing it through the rumor mill. I'll be in here with you. This would be one I would really want to be talking to him about, is if the Department of Agriculture at the state level could somehow bust that up so that each county gets their own group here. So instead of when there's a problem that they call Oahu, and maybe 3 years from now somebody will come and investigate what happened on December 23rd, you know,
2013. Right.
So if we have a group here, when we're looking at how we're going to regulate this Ordinance 960,
which is the new name for Bill 2491,
which is the Right to Know Ordinance. And so when we're looking at that, and I'm on that team who are looking, how do we regulate this? And Mauna Kea Trask is working with a number of different groups of people, kind of how are we going to regulate it, and how do we work in collaboration with the state? And so I think that what will be really great to be hearing from our representatives is what initiatives our bills can go into this year so that we don't preempt it. You know, what could happen.
What does that mean?
Preempt means like doing an end run around what was achieved on both Hawaii Island and Kauai. And right now Maui is trying to replicate what we did. Last year there was a couple of bills that got killed that were looking to take out of the county charters to protect the life and health of the land and the people, and really just to be sort of be regulating the asset.
Right.
And so we fought really, really hard to hold on to that right. Well,
home rule.
Home rule, but even just holding that little piece. And so I've got, you know, news through the grapevine that there is a big push right now, and the industry, the ag industry, is working really, really hard to circumvent what happened here on these outer islands. And we need to be working together to make sure that the state and the county are being able to fairly analyze what these industries are getting, you know, are able to do. I shouldn't say getting away with it, what they're able to do. And something that is really important to remember is that Hawaii was shifted from being an independent nation to a state, because of the dominance of the ag industry, it literally was the,
sure,
sugar barons,
the sugar barons
who came in and put a gun to the queen's head, basically, and took her country from her. And so our whole constitution is built and designed with a bit of an uneven structure to be protecting the sugar industry.
And large industrial agriculture.
Large industrial agriculture. So how do we get an even playing field? How do we work to, you know, balance all this stuff out? And it's not that we want to kill large agriculture, but how do we have it be something that actually is
going to be in service of the community that,
yep,
that it's operating inside of? I think that's what people really want.
Yeah. Again, there's a concept of killing commercial agriculture, and you weigh that against the fact that they're so supported by governmental regulation and laws that it's an unfair advantage for the commercial entities based on the prices they pay to lease, the laws that protect them from liability. It puts independent small farmers at an economic disadvantage. So, again, when we're talking about solutions, it's almost like they take advantage of polarizing the issue. When, why can't you just level the playing field for the small independent farmer? Why should DuPont and Syngenta get government subsidy, yet people that are producing good food and remediating toxic lands have to struggle and pay bigger fees? That doesn't make any sense. That could be a nice first step.
Yeah, well, but it's indicative of the political power that those entities have, that they've been able to distort the playing field and tip it so that it comes out towards them.
At a state and a federal level. Yeah. I'm going to give you an anecdotal follow-up to a story that happened to me that shows the absurdity of depending on the state to take care of things. It's September 11th this year. I was driving by one of the crop test fields by the airport, and I got sick. And I called the company. I called Pioneer to ask what it was so I could figure out what to do.
You got sick as you were driving by?
I was in my Jeep with the windows open driving down Ahukini, about 40 miles an hour. My nose started running like a faucet. My eyes were burning. I couldn't see. They were tearing up. My skin was burning. And I pulled over because I couldn't see, and I got sicker. And I was ridiculed when I called, and then I called the state, and I called the mayor's office, and I called the Department of Ag to try to find out, at that moment, what is it? What should I do with it? And then it got published in the Garden Aisle, and I took a lot of heat for that. 100 days later, 4 days ago, I got the report from the state that was completed over 2 months ago, sitting in Honolulu, and I had to pay for the report to release it to find out what chemical I got exposed to.
And what was it?
It was insecticide. The commercial name is Mustang Max. It's one of the nerve agents that you spray, and it was absolutely consistent with my symptoms. Plus, I smelt that bubble gum.
That's the masking agent.
And it was in the report. It's a 50-page report that was mostly redacted. But it was sitting in Honolulu in the state office, coincidentally during the time where there was a veto, an override, a vote, sitting in Abercrombie's office. And the people that did the report on Kauai finished the report long ago.
Sure, 60 days.
And I just think it's just absurd to count on a regulatory agency that's so broken.
Right.
And for, this is going to sound extreme, but it seems to me, as an individual who this happens to, it seems to me that there's no logical reason why you would hang on to the report, why you wouldn't inform the person.
Well, it's
seems
pretty
corrupt.
Obvious why.
It seems corrupt to me.
Yeah.
And 100 days to get the report?
Yeah, that's a little bit of a long time.
Yeah, I mean, I could see if it was difficult, but if they, you know, if they're understaffed or something to that effect.
Yeah, well, but they're understaffed by design.
Yeah, by design.
Not only are they understaffed, they held it up, and they had they knew the chemical that I was exposed to.
Mustang Max.
Yeah.
Sounds like some sort of a drifter from the plains.
A bad hombre.
Yeah, a bad hombre, a bad actor.
So you're listening to the tail end of what we're calling out of soapbox, out of the world. Out of the Soapbox Live with Jonathan, Felicia, Larry, and Eric. We have a caller for a moment. You're on the air. Hey.
Aloha, hi. Caller. Go ahead.
Hey, how are you guys?
Hi, Rick.
Rick, and you all know me. But I've been homeless, you know, under one, you know, reason or another for some 8 years now. And fortunately, I've been living in a large tour bus, which I bought from Roberts, and parked on a piece of land where the landlord is very kind to me and hasn't charged me a cent.
Oh, good.
So, don't even pay rent, but that's not going to last forever. He's trying to develop his land, and he deserves to.
What kind of arrangement do you have? What good things do you do for the landowner in exchange for being able to stay there?
Not for him in a while, but I will do anything that he asks me to. You know, I'll be his security guard or whatever. I used to cut his grass, but I had to sell my business after a motorcycle accident. So I've been, you know, kind of laid up for a while, and recently damaged my back picking up a friend in a wheelchair so she would be more comfortable, and damaged my back doing that. So, you know, I have been through the HUD thing and been booted off or ignored I don't know how many times. You know, you run into people who just don't like you. And then you're done. And you say, well, what do I do now? And they say, I don't know. You know, there's no list anymore. Go look somewhere else. You know, try another part of the island or whatever. And I don't have a lot of luck with bureaucracy, although I do know the mayor and several of his aides, and I will talk to them. But it's difficult for people.
Yes.
I make $600 a month, or $595 actually, and I'm broke now before Christmas because I gave the money to my kids, which is fine. But you know, it every month is uncomfortable, and it's not likely to change unless I get a job. And I'm, you know, semi-crippled, and my skills are mostly in chainsaw work and cutting large areas of grass. So, you know, I can't really do that right now. I don't know if I'll heal enough to, I'm 65 almost. I don't know if I'll heal enough to do that again. But, you know, I'm willing to do... to deal with the landlord, and he's been very good to me. I wouldn't be surprised if when he does his construction of his condominiums here, that he included me somehow.
Well, I'm glad for what is working for you. I'm glad that you have your bus and that you have a good friend that shares that with you, and I hope that you have a Merry Christmas. I appreciate your sharing your perspective. I've got another caller holding.
I just wanted to point out that there are people who are far worse off than I am. And, yes, they pop up in the woods all over the place, and they're quite often addicted and can't get away from it somehow. And it's harder when you're living in a tent than it would be if you had even a house.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, well... bless you.
You. And bless you.
And thank you so much.
No problem.
Okay. All right. We'll take care.
Yes.
And Jazz with John will be up next. Always a great show. And I'm looking forward to Thursday's show. I'm looking forward to the discussion. I think that when we're talking about building solutions, you know, it is good that it is such a small community that we really can speak to our elected officials. And I think that it's a tough job, and people can be very disappointed. And like what Larry's pointing out is on any issue, people are going to see it differently. So it's almost their job is disappointing someone. And so I always try and speak to them respectfully and recognize what a difficult space it is. And that also, even if I feel that there's a few individuals that maybe are operating not in full integrity.
You mean in bad faith?
Something like that, yeah. Like there's, I'm not going to be specific, but I've seen where there's choices that are made that really discourage me. And one-on-one, I might confront them with that. But I still am respectful to it because it's a lot better way to actually make progress.
I just wanted to say before we put on that caller that Bringing It Home movie is going to be on January 6th at 7 o'clock at Church of the Pacific.
Oh, good. We got it right.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
So, wanted to clarify.
Hey, thank you, Eric.
No worries.
Okay, you are on the air. And
My Christmas wish for everybody besides their basic essential needs is that everybody tune in to Democracy Now every day at noon, or 11.
11 to 12. It's a great show.
It's one of the best shows there is, and I'm so grateful for KKCR for promoting it and putting it on the air. You know, thank you, Dean, and everybody. They had on the news today is the irony of kind of like what you're talking about is in the prison system in America, which is so corrupt. Besides, they torture people with solitary confinement. The amount of money that they spend each year to house one prisoner could send you to college.
Yeah, and not just not just like a community college, some really prestigious Ivy League school.
Exactly. You know, I mean, it's just mind-blowing the amount of money that they throw around, especially for nonviolent criminals, right? And now the problem, because so many people have been put behind bars for life in prison, that now there's such an aging population of elderly people in prisons that need, like, nursing care and stuff like that, round-the-clock attention that these prisons can't afford. You know, and even the warden of the infamous Angola prison in Louisiana, which is notorious, right? You know, he was making a plea that, you know, look, we need to spend more money on rehabilitating younger prisoners so they can get a job when they get out of prison instead of housing all these elderly people, you know, doing extravagant sentences like drug possession.
Right. And then at some level, like I've been reading some pretty good documentation on it, you know, at some level it's a form of genocide. Especially when they're targeting a particular demographic, because you take people absolutely out of the breeding pool for a good 15 years, 10 years,
40 years.
But I mean, even if you put them in there at 20 years old and you hold them for 10 years and you derail their life success, even once they come out, it's not at all likely that they will be able to as easily have a family, take care of a family, make it work.
So many of these criminals are drug-related charges, and the war on drugs is such like a travesty.
Yes.
Know? I mean, if you're rich, if you're white, if you have a good lawyer, you know, compared to black minorities or Hispanic, you know, I mean, it's
even the target in how the arrest is happening. We're almost at the end of the show, so thank you.
Well, thank you very much for letting me talk. I appreciate it very much, and congratulations, Eric. That's quite an accomplishment. I'm very proud of you, Eric.
Okay. Thank you. All right. Take care. I have a really trivial question. If you got a car, would you want gray or red?
I would not want a red car.
just stands out too much.
Yeah.
It's the most ticketed car.
Most ticketed color.
Yeah, I would avoid that.
Yeah.
I mean,
I'd go neither.
If you're thinking of giving me a car, that is, Felicia.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've been very good boy this year.
Yeah. It's interesting when you look at things. I brought my Jeep in to get fixed, and all four of the ball joints are out, so it's like it needs its shoulders repaired. And so it's like $1,500, and
yikes.
There's like more things like $2,000 worth of work that needs on the car. It's like feels like taking an animal into the to get put to sleep or something, because I really like my vehicle, and they've got these things with leases or purchasing the zero money down. And, you know, do you just rotate it out? It's tough, you know, because I like to like hold on to something for as long as I possibly can.
Yeah, but everything comes to an end at some point.
Not with duct tape.
Not with duct tape, but you can't really fix ball joints with duct tape.
Well, and you can't keep the show going with duct tape either. I was looking at the clock, and we're coming to the end of this two-hour session of Out of the Box, Out of the Soapbox Live.
That's right.
And
so, Merry, Merry Christmas to people. What are your closing thoughts?
Me? I just am really appreciative this time of year. I've been blessed in many, many ways, and I just want to thank the universe about that. That's all I have to say.
Larry?
I agree. I think it's a cool time of the year where it's a good time to be reflective and think about new beginnings as well as that. You know, it's not the end of the year, but a new beginning. And a wish, particularly with your show coming up Thursday, I think a lot of these issues can be you can find solutions if we can simplify government, make it understandable. And I'm not sure why government and regulation has to be so long and complicated. And maybe our legislators would make it easier and simpler to pass laws and make them understandable.
Let's hope for that. And Eric?
I just want to wish everyone a great passing of the New Year's, and whatever your religious beliefs, have a great next week. And
And we're going to be on the air for New Year's Eve. Are you going to be here
New
with
Year's
me?
Eve? Maybe, or I might be drinking somewhere.
Oh, okay.
Hey, I'm 23. I have a girlfriend. We'll see what happens.
Get a stand-in for you. Okay, well, KKCR listeners, we love you. And Merry Christmas, Mele Kilikimaka, Happy New Year, and I will be with Jonathan on Thursday, and then back next Tuesday for a real Happy New Year. And Jazz with John is up next, and before that, we have a very, very short county council report, because they have the week off.
A hooey ho, everybody.
A hooey ho.